RTVE Audio. Descarga la nueva app y disfruta de los programas de RNE y nuestros podcasts originales.
Radio Exterior de España.
English Language Service.
Greetings from Madrid and welcome to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio, where we bring Spain to you through our shortwave broadcasts. Amy Egan speaking alongside my colleague, Marilyn Quintana. What are we doing today, Marilyn?
The 7th of April is World Health Day, a date to raise awareness about health-related issues and promote healthy habits. On today's broadcast, we speak with two Spanish scientists who are involved in pioneer investigations that could potentially improve diagnosis and treatment for Alzheimer's disease and cancer.
On the one hand, Marta Cortés Cantelli from the Fundación Jiménez Díaz studies the connection between cardiovascular diseases and Alzheimer's. On the other hand, Héctor Peinado from the Spanish National Cancer Research Center investigates about exosomes, the vesicles that simulate cancer metastasis.
So cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's have an asymptomatic phase of 15 to 20 years. And that's when we think we can actually do something before the neurons, for example, die.
So these novel inhibitors that we are trying is going to help therapies that are already in the clinic to improve their efficiency or counterattack the resistance to those treatments.
On today's broadcast, we have help from sound technician Jesus Carreras and production help from Cristina Dorado. Before we get into the rest of the broadcast, we bring you the news. Spain continues to prepare its recognition of Palestine as a state, according to the Foreign Affairs Minister. Quote, "We're talking about it with other states of the EU and other countries that approach us after learning about Spain's position."
Estamos hablando de ello, sí, exactamente, con otros estados, tanto de la Unión Europea como otros países, que se nos acercan, viendo la posición que tiene España.
Pressure on the Israeli government for an immediate ceasefire is growing exponentially after the killing of 7 international aid workers at the beginning of this week, with even their greatest ally, the United States, finally joining the call.
If we don't see the changes that we need to see, there'll be changes in our own policy.
The aid charity World Central Kitchen has demanded an independent investigation into the deaths of their workers, saying that the Israeli military could not credibly investigate its own failure.
Spanish-American chef José Andrés, founder of the charity, believes his workers were targeted.
This was not just a bad luck situation where, we dropped the bomb in the wrong place. This was over 1.5, 1.8 kilometers with a very defined humanitarian convoy that had signs in the top, in the roof.
Israel said on Friday that its inquiry into the incident had found serious errors and breaches of procedure by its military. Two senior officers were dismissed and senior commanders formally reprimanded.
Back in Spain, the Spanish left-wing government announced they will appeal to the UN, the European Parliament, and the Council of Europe to protect the Spanish democratic memory law.
The right-wing regional governments of Castilla y León and Valencia have proposed a new Concord law, which would invalidate several points included in the National Democratic Memory Law, which was approved in 2022.
The Concord law does not directly condemn Francoism and would mean the elimination of commemoratory events, centers of investigation, and economic aid for individuals looking to exhumate their relatives killed during the war and the dictatorship. Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez.
En fin, no hemos llegado hasta aquí para consentir la ola de revisionismo ultraderechista que recorre.
We have not come this far to consent the wave of far-right revisionism that goes through the most advanced democracies in the world, and obviously also the Spanish one. That's why the Spanish government will act in all the national and international institutions to defend the democratic memory law from denial.
Ley de memoria democrática frente al negacionismo.
Precisely to put a focus on democratic memory, Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez visited the Valley of Cuelgamuros, formerly known as the Valley of the Fallen.
It is estimated that almost 33,000 victims of Francoism were buried there without the knowledge of their families. Currently, forensic surgeons are working on the exhumation and identification of 160 victims.
Relatives of these victims were not allowed to enter in the crypts for security reasons, but on Thursday, the Secretary of the State Democratic Memory, Fernando Martínez López, announced that security conditions have improved and visitors are now allowed in groups of three people.
En estos momentos hay mejores condiciones, sin riesgo, por eso se ha podido entrar y por eso se le ha podido comunicar a todos los familiares que en grupos pequeños de tres.
So far, the remains of 11 people were recovered in the Valley of Cuelgamuros and were already handed over to their relatives.
The cruise ship that was detained in Barcelona earlier this week resumed course on Thursday after dozens of Bolivians with invalid travel documents left the ship.
The ship was detained in Spain on Wednesday when Bolivian passengers were denied entry into the European border-free Schengen area. According to Spanish Interior Ministry source, not only were the passengers' visas invalid, but they were also carrying false documents.
The cruise ship is now continuing its Mediterranean journey without the Bolivian passengers after the delay. The Bolivians, denied access to Spanish territory, will be taken to another boat while authorities process their cases and decide on potential deportations or granting of asylum.
You're listening to
Radio Exterior de España.
According to data from the Spanish Society of Neurology, Alzheimer's disease could affect 800,000 people in the country. Every year in Spain, 40,000 people are diagnosed with this disease and 90% of them are older than 65. This makes Alzheimer's disease the main cause for disability in elders in Spain. Alzheimer's disease has become a silent epidemic and a major social and health problem. Now, a research team in the Fundación Jiménez Díaz of Madrid started a pioneer investigation that focuses on understanding the vascular component of Alzheimer's disease and its connection to atherosclerosis in asymptomatic stages. Biochemist Marta Cortés-Cantelli is part of that team and is joining us today. Marta, thank you for being with us here in Casa de la Radio.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Marta, in very simple terms, you are basically studying the connection between the heart and the brain. Why is it important to study this connection?
Well, first of all, let me say that this is done in collaboration with the Centro Nacional de Investigaciones Cardiovasculares, also in Madrid. So Alzheimer's, it's a very complex disorder. It's being affected by different angles. And one of them is an important vascular component. So what we've seen, or it's been already known, that different cardiovascular risk factors, such as, for example, obesity, high cholesterol, high sugar in the blood, not doing exercise, and not following a healthy diet, all of them are risk factors for Alzheimer's, not only for cardiovascular disease, but also for Alzheimer's disease. So what we've been studying is what's going on in the preclinical phases. And by that, I mean when there is no symptoms yet in the individuals. So we are working on a population study that is carried out at the NIC, at the Cardiovascular Center, that is called the PESA study. And we have 4,000 individuals that were middle-aged and asymptomatic when we started the study. And now we can actually analyze what's going on in their brains in connection to what's going on with their cardiovascular profile.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of cardiovascular illnesses did these people have?
So these people, this population, are considered asymptomatic. So they are considered healthy. And that was one of the inclusion criteria that we followed to let them enter into the study. But it is true that many cardiovascular diseases, for example, atrial fibrillation, is linked to the development of dementia later in life. And also the presence of atherosclerosis is also highly connected to the development of Alzheimer's in late life. So what we don't know is what's going on in the early phases of both disorders. So cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's have an asymptomatic phase of 15 to 20 years. And that's when we think we can actually do something before the neurons, for example, die.
So it's very important to start as early as possible.
Yes, yes.
Well, I know that you and your team have described some genetic variants that associate atherosclerosis, a cardiovascular disease, with Alzheimer's disease, which, as we said, is neurodegenerative. Can you tell us a little bit about these variants? What are they?
So it is known that Alzheimer's, as I said, is very multifactorial, and it has also a genetic component. So it's been described for years, that's not something that we discover, that a certain isoforms that are, let me explain it because it's not a scientific audience, I guess. So we have this protein that is called apolipoprotein E, ApoE, and has different isoforms, and each of the isoforms affect the risk of Alzheimer's in a different way, which is very unique. So there is one isoform that protects the people from developing Alzheimer's, which is ApoE2, and there is another isoform called ApoE4 that increases the risk of suffering this neurodegenerative disorder. So what we discovered in this last paper is that these isoforms are also linked to the development of atherosclerosis in the very early asymptomatic phases. So we don't know now if that translates into that risk of developing Alzheimer's, but we are going to keep studying and trying to decipher what's the link between these two.
Mm-hmm. So what led you to begin studying this connection?
So I did my PhD here in Madrid, and then I moved to New York to do my postdoctoral studies. And the lab that I joined in New York at the Rockefeller University, they were studying thrombosis and hemostasis in Alzheimer's. And that's when I got very interested into this vascular component of Alzheimer's. And then when I moved back to Madrid, I got a Marie Curie Fellowship to join the Cardiovascular Center. And it was Dr. Valentin Fuster who brought me back to this Cardiovascular Center because he was very into studying this heart-brain connection. And that's when I learned that they were leading, and Dr. Fuster was leading this PESA study. And that's when we decided to start studying this connection in very early phases.
How common can we say is this connection?
I don't know if I can give you a number. So having several cardiovascular risk factors increase the risk a lot. So I would say that we need to control those because many of them, we can actually control them. We can quit smoking. We can follow a healthy lifestyle. We can do many things to have those under control. And it's good for cardiovascular diseases, but now we know it's also good for neurodegenerative diseases as Alzheimer's.
So could, in a way, Alzheimer's be prevented if we take care?
To some extent, yes. Probably we cannot completely stop it, but we can at least delay its progress. And that can have a great impact, because if we can delay the onset of the disease by 2-3 years, that's 2 or 3 years that we give a very good quality of life to that person.
Mm-hmm. And how about after? Could this mean maybe a change in the treatment for Alzheimer's?
I think the treatment needs to be a composed of different treatments, not just one. And probably this taking care of all the cardiovascular risk factors should be one of them. We can also talk about this thrombosis that I talked about a few minutes ago, and we can actually treat that with anticoagulants, but that's in very early phases. But again, I think the treatment for Alzheimer's is not just one pill. It's probably a combination of treatments, and one of them should be this, taking care of yourself and all of your cardiovascular risk factors.
Well, you spoke about cardiovascular risk factors. So is there any way to identify patients that could benefit from this treatment?
Yeah, I mean, these cardiovascular risk factors are very common, and it's something that your general physician always asks you about: if you smoke, if you are overweight, if you follow a healthy diet, if you have a high cholesterol, or if you have hypertension. So those are cardiovascular risk factors that are already implemented into the general medical practice. So we know very well, or the physicians know very well, who has these cardiovascular risk factors. And they actually are always trying to get the people to follow a healthier lifestyle. So I think, and this is something that Dr. Fuster always say, he's a cardiologist, and he always say that when he tell people to follow these, for example, someone that has had a heart attack, so you have to follow this healthy lifestyle and control all your cardiovascular risk factors. And he says that the people get so used to that that they say, well, I'd rather die from a heart attack very rapidly, and that's it. And he says, well, that can also affect your cognitive function. And you can maybe be for many years without knowing who is your wife or your children. And that's also, that can be also due to at least partially, to the cardiovascular risk factors. And he noticed that there is a change on how the people respond mm-hmm. when they talk about the brain.
Yeah, because it's very important mm. and if it's connected, mm-hmm. then we should take care of it. Well, Marta, you have a long career in STEM. You have worked as a researcher in the Rockefeller University in the US, in the Spanish National Center for Cardiovascular Research. You have been nominated twice to the top 100 women leaders in Spain, and you have received 2 Vanguardia de la Ciencia awards. Recently, we had a program about women in STEM, and on that program, we focused on engineering, but of course, STEM also includes science. Now, you have a long and successful career in STEM. What would you say to women who are considering a career in this field?
I would definitely encourage them. I would also say that this is something that you have to do in common with your partner, and it's very important that you choose a partner that fully supports you. Besides that, I have 2 children, and that is also something that women in STEM always try to encourage, to have that in mind when we apply for projects or for fellowships, to take into account that we've been mothers and we've gone through pregnancies and maternity leaves and so on.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, I wanted to say that, well, April the 7th is World Health Day, a day sponsored by the World Health Organization to draw attention about health and raise awareness about certain health-related issues. This year's theme is My Health, My Right, which aims to champion the right of everyone everywhere to have access to quality health services, education and information, and promote healthy habits and a healthy environment. Now, of course, healthy habits are very related to what we were saying. But why do you think it's so important to raise awareness about the right to health?
I think the right to health involves, as we said, controlling all these cardiovascular risk factors. But it is true that it's not, sometimes it's not available to everyone to, for example, follow a healthy lifestyle if you don't have enough resources to buy healthy food. For example, fruit and vegetables are becoming expensive, and so I think that's one of the parts that people really should, or governments should be aware of, that it's very important that everyone has access to these healthy diets.
Well, Marta Cortés Cantelli, researcher in the Institute of Health Research in the Fundación Jiménez Díaz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
According to the World Health Organization, cancer is a leading cause of death worldwide, accounting for nearly 10 million deaths in 2020. In Spain, it is also one of the main causes of mortality. According to Redecan calculations, the number of cancers diagnosed in Spain in 2024 is estimated to reach more than 286,000 cases. For a few years now, a team in the Spanish National Cancer Research Center have been investigating vesicles that tumor cells send into the blood, which they use to communicate with other parts of the body and stimulate biological processes that produce tumor growth and metastasis. These vesicles are called exosomes. To tell us about them and their role in cancer metastasis, we are joined by Héctor Peinado, Head of Microenvironment and Metastasis Group in the Spanish National Cancer Research Center. Héctor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, first of all, this is a very complex vocabulary. I believe that we are all familiar with cancer, but what exactly are exosomes?
So these are tiny vesicles. We can say that it's a small box, kind of a small box that are secreted by the cells in our body. The thing is, nobody knew their role until we started to study them in 2008. We started. So basically what they are small messengers that are secreted by the cell. They are normally shared by the cells. They've been implicated in physiological pathways like maternal fetus communication, for example. But we realized that not only physiologically they play a role, but also pathologically in cancer, they actually help the tumor cells to metastasize in distal organs. And this has been all my studies that we've been working.
Mm-hmm. So how do they do that? What is the role in metastasis?
So what we've been studying is a concept called the pre-metastatic niche. That means when the primary tumor is growing in our body, they are sending message to all other organs in our body, And we didn't know what was these matches about, so we were studying these vesicles, and they contain proteins. They contain small molecules called RNA and DNA that they share this material with other organs, and they prepare these pre-metastatic niches. Basically, they are preparing the homing of the metastatic. It's like preparing a new home for the metastatic cell. All these are different molecules. They reach other organs. They prepare those niches. And then tumor cells are going to be able to metastasize more efficiently. So in other words, it's a messenger that normally helps the tumor cell to metastasize in other organs. This is what we realized along the years.
So how exactly are they developed?
So cells are able to secrete vesicles as a way of communication with other cells to tell, I mean, I am growing, so I need nutrients, I need more proteins to survive. And this is physiologically happening. The tumor cell realize somehow that they need to overproduce vesicles in order to enhance this communication. It's like being a little bit crazy. I mean, the cell, the tumor cell is a normal cell that become crazy and they grow without control. So basically those uncontrolled cells that are tumor cells, they secrete a lot of vesicles, they prepare those pre-metastatic niches, and now these niches are able to be more able to be homed and metastasized. So the tumor cell is happier in those areas where the vesicles are landed. So these molecules, we are trying to develop several ways of investigation in order to analyze molecules involved in the targeting of those organs. And how can we actually develop novel therapies to block not only the production of these vesicles, but also when they land in these metastatic organs, if we can block this interaction with the metastatic organs and also blocking the metastatic dissemination. So we use the information in order to develop novel therapies anti-metastatic. So this is something that we are trying to do.
What is this way that could block them?
So we developed several inhibitors. So imagine in a laboratory, we have a pathway to investigate which are the molecules in the vesicles. So we identify one molecule, and then we see this molecule is promoting metastasis. Once you have these molecules, you can develop novel inhibitor. And this is what we are testing right now. We identify one molecule called NGFR. It's a nerve growth factor receptor. We have inhibitors of this nerve growth factor receptor, and we are testing this as anti-metastatic therapy. We found that this is working in mouse models, so we call it preclinical models. In the laboratory, we are treating the mice with this inhibitor. We can reduce metastasis. We can somehow block the pre-metastatic niche formation. The idea now is to try to develop this inhibitor in the human setting. So meaning we are not still in the clinical setting. We really need to do this in a preclinical model. We can patent this inhibitor, and of course, we'll lead this to a company that can develop this. So this is the idea. Identify a target, develop inhibitors, and trying to improve therapies that are already in the market.
So this could potentially mean a change in the treatment for cancer, right?
Yeah, that could help. Why I am looking in metastatic disease, this is responsible for 90% of the deaths in cancer, right? So we focus on metastatic dissemination. There are already treatments. I work mostly in melanoma, for example. In melanoma, there are already treatments that are successful, such as immunotherapy, but not all the patients respond to immunotherapy, and some of them develop resistance. So these novel inhibitors that we are trying is going to help therapies that are already in the clinic to improve their efficiency or counterattack the resistance to those treatments. So this is what I see, the angle that we can improve. Of course, this would lead to a development of the inhibitor and testing it in human, because we mostly work in preclinical modeling in my laboratory. The idea is to have this identified and develop novel inhibitors.
How about diagnosis? Could it also serve to improve diagnosis?
Yeah, actually, we use these vesicles, these exosomes that we've been talking about. They are shed out in the plasma of the patients. And we've been looking at them, and we have several other, it's not the same marker, we have other biomarkers that can identify patients at risk of metastasis. Imagine you have a cancer, normally melanoma patient, when they have a cancer, they go under surgery, right? They remove the primary tumor. If you don't have metastasis, it's good news, right? But if you do have metastasis, you can treat them, and then we can use the plasma to monitor them. So the idea is to develop a biomarker. It's called liquid biopsy. You use the plasma of the patient, so it's a blood test. We use the plasma in order to identify the biomarker. If you are positive for the biomarker, you are going to be more likely to relapse. Mm-hmm. So this biomarker can tell us, okay, this patient is going to relapse, so retreat it. So the idea is that if it's negative, it's good news. You are not going to relapse. We developed several markers, not only under treatment, but we are trying to go for early diagnosis. And then we opened in the laboratory a couple of lines of investigation for early diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, for example, mm-hmm. which is another cancer we study, and in melanoma. The idea is when you go to the physician, they can take a blood test and we can try to identify novel marker for diagnosis. And also for treatment. So is what we call response to treatment. You are efficiently responding to treatment. Not only in melanoma, also in pancreatic cancer. Now we started also in breast cancer. We have many people working also in lung cancer. So there are many tumor types that we are looking at.
Well, your team also studies the tumor microenvironment. What is it?
Tumor microenvironment is basically all the cells that are surrounding the tumor. We have the tumor cells that became crazy, as I told you. There are other cells that are around this tumor. These are cells normally from our blood, endothelial cells that are our blood cells that we call fibroblasts, which is the scaffold of our skin, for example. Many years ago, we didn't pay attention at all. But we realized that the tumor is communicating with the microenvironment using these exosomes. And somehow, the exosomes are boosting the communication, and immune cells that are supposed to counterattack the tumor, they became tricked. These vesicles are basically tricking the immune system and helping the tumor to develop. So we are trying to study how to convert these pro-metastatic vesicles into anti-metastatic vesicles. This is a long shot. I mean, it's not easy, but we are trying to understand. It's a kind of a novel way of communication. We're trying to understand this novel language, and we are trying to decode it and counterattack, let's say that way.
So it's also very important to study what's surrounding the tumor and not only the tumor, right?
Totally. We were aware. Actually, I was aware when I went into my postdoc, when I went to New York. I was not only focusing tumor at that time, and then I realized there are other things like microenvironment. Is you are my microenvironment now. We are talking, right? So is you are influencing me as well. I am influencing you. So this is the same way in cancer. We are trying to understand a whole scenario so we can counterattack not only tumor cells but also the microenvironment.
Mm-hmm. And what are the future objectives from this investigation?
The idea is to have early diagnostic markers, how we were talking. So this is one of the big shows that we have is early detection of cancer is a hallmark because we really need to identify the cancer before it's metastatic. This can save a lot of life. If you diagnose cancer before having metastasis, it's going to be a good time for the patient, right? Then it's treatment. So diagnosis, early diagnosis and treatment, improving the therapies that already in the market, this is what we are aiming. So these are the main targets in my laboratory right now.
Well, lastly, April the 7th is World Health Day. This year's theme is My Health, My Right. Why do you think it's important to raise awareness about the right to health?
Well, it's really important to be aware that we can do something. And this is what we can do is manage, for example, our diet. We can try to control the diet. We can try to, in my case, we work in melanoma. We know these tanning beds that some people use. These are not really good. That's a way. I mean, the less exposure we have for UV, the better for the melanoma. So these are habits that we can have just to be aware that, having impact of our microenvironment here is going to be what we eat, what we are exposed to, trying to develop this, is going to help one branch of the tumor risk factors. So there, if we can reduce the tumor risk factors by containing or being more healthy, having exercise, practicing healthy habits, it's going to be one leg of anti-tumor. You can start by yourself thinking, okay, I want to do something for me, just trying to be more healthy, not doing risk factors for cancer. Of course, the other thing is go to your physician and tell if you see something that is weird. I don't know, if you have a spot in the skin, just try to go, okay, this is something. And then the physician can tell you more. So these are two healthy things that you can do. Control yourself and go to the physician, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, Héctor Peinado, head of microenvironment and metastasis group in the Spanish National Cancer Research Center, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for your interview. Thank you.
that brings us to the end of today's broadcast. You've been listening to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio. I've been Amy Egan, joined by my colleague, Marilyn Quintana.
Today we've had help from sound technician Jesus Carreras and production help from Cristina Dorado. We thank you for listening and hope you tune in for future broadcasts.